Okay.
Will you do an intro?
Yeah, I hit record, so that's my intro. No, I'll do. I'll think of something. You, can you give me a sound test indicative of your day today, so I can make sure that Audacity is working?
Sure. Screaming fat kid, high school football, and the police.
Wait, that's your sound test?
Yep.
And the police?
It's indicative of my day.
And the police, did you say?
That's right.
Okay. Phil Opian Tubes. That's my sound test. Phil Opian Tubes. He's a tennis coach in Tempe, Arizona. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And good evening to another fine episode of the Very Loud Introed. Just Because, and I am Jason Mark, and with me in the virtual studio is Joseph Neal, and we are going to talk today about a myriad variety of subjects, a varied myriad of subjects. There's going to be variety, there's going to be myriads, there's going to be mermaids, mermen, merveys, right? Because we don't expect merkind to adhere to a particular gender norm on JVC. We think that if you were born in the ocean, and you know what? Maybe you were born in the ocean and you don't even identify as mer. Maybe you're sand. You swim in the ocean, but you're a sand boy. Maybe. I don't know. That was my intro. Never let me do that again.
Most mer people are non-binary.
Are they?
They don't go by ma'am or sir. They go by mer.
Mer? Yeah. So like if there was a guy named Phil, he'd be mer Phil.
It's really funny that you brought up Phil.
Yeah.
Though I've never heard of anyone with the last name Tubes.
Well,
that would be a.
Have you ever heard of a person whose middle name is Opian?
Opian sounds like maybe a feasible name.
Okay. It's feasible.
From somewhere on the planet. Opian. But Tubes, I don't know.
Well, what if we spelled it with a P?
What heritage would Tubes be?
It's Flemish. It's P-T-O-U-V-H-E-S. Tubes. Oops.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, let's talk about vaginas.
All right.
No.
Sounds good.
I haven't read yet, but there's a famous person. She's a famous gynecologist doctor who advocates for women's rights. And she advocates for, people not being ignorant about how women, are. Her name's Jennifer Gunther. I'm probably saying it wrong. I follow her on Twitter. And she has a book out called The Vagina Bible. And I want to get it. I think I know quite a bit about vaginas, in terms of what they're for and how they work and where they are and what to do with them. But
how they feel
and smell and taste and sound. That all of them. See, smell, hear, taste. Yeah, with the sound. But I'm imagining that I'm going to read this book and I'm going to learn some stuff, some things I didn't know. And I'm looking forward to that because, I'm very much of a feminist type of person. And I think that, we live in a world where everybody knows about dicks, both from the good kind and the bad kind. And so if everybody knew more about vaginas, a woman should not be defined by her vagina, but she should not be defined by somebody's ignorance of vaginas, which is how it works right now.
You ever heard of a TERF before?
Oh, God, no. Tell me what's that. It sounds gross.
Let me see if I've got this right. You might want to look it up, but it's a trans-exclusionary radical feminist.
Whoa, really? No, yeah. I have heard of those. I didn't know that's what they're called, and they sound like awful people.
Perhaps they are. I don't know a whole lot about it. I just heard about it for the first time, and it's women who believe that that trans women should not portend to understand the complete experience of being a biological woman.
I would say that from philosophical standpoint, that a claim could be made that if you didn't start at day one being told what you are, and if in the middle of the game you switch teams, so to speak, which is a terrible analogy, I can imagine why someone would want to say that. But the fact of the matter is, it's fallacious to suggest that one woman's experience is every woman's experience, or that every woman's experience is one woman's experience. To say that this trans woman does not know what it's like to be a woman is stupid, because no woman knows what it's like to be a woman except for the woman that she is. She can't say she knows what it's like to be a woman in that country over there, or in that synagogue over there, or in that baseball stadium over there.
This if you're a just playing devil's advocate, if you're going along that line of reasoning, then no trans person should be able to speak for the entire trans community.
I agree with that as well. I don't think that anybody should speak for whatever community they ipso facto are related to, whether it's racial, religious, gender specific. I don't care to say that.
And yet people do all the time.
Absolutely. And I think that's where racism, for example, starts with, because the opposite happens. A person will take their point of view of someone of another race and then attribute that view to all the people of that race, which is just dumb, right? It doesn't allow people who are different from yourself to be assholes, because it's like, well, if I say he's an asshole, I'm saying everybody who's like him is an asshole. No, you're not. This guy can be an asshole and still be not the same as you. Anyway, this is – who cares?
wait. But before we change subjects, because, yeah, I mean, we could talk – we could really go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah. Let's talk about rabbit holes.
But here, I would like to welcome everybody to the Joe Rogan podcast. welcome to the Joe Rogan Experience, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Jason. What do you think about trans people that – transgender people that they are – post-operation, I believe that's a politically incorrect term.
Is it?
I'm not sure. I can't keep up. But a trans person who has completed their operation and then they join, then they compete in the sport of their current gender and just dominate and break records like up and down, left and right. What do you think of that?
So here's a guy, for example, and by guy I mean, all right, let me start over. Here's a person born with a penis who, because of that, because of the testosterone in his body, has more human growth hormone or whatever it's called than people who were born with two X chromosomes, and then he gets his junk chopped off and a hole inserted and some boobs, but because he still has the testosterone, ostensibly, because even though you pump them full of estrogen, it just turns into testosterone. Everybody knows that if you've taken a class. What do I think about that? Well, first of all,
And then you break the record for cycling in the female cycling. Well, then you dominate. You fucking destroy the record.
Well,
you
see,
that's fair.
Fair, Schmear. I mean, I don't much. I don't
Shouldn't there be some sort of standard of fairness in competitive sports?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think sports all by themselves I've been thinking about this as an entity, as a thing, as a like a I'll even say as a gestalt. Sports are stupid and meaningless. I mean, I get that people are inspired by them. I get that people push themselves to be the best. And there are some people out there who are gifted and they can do things that other people can't do. And that's all well and good. But who fucking cares if you can run faster than that person today? If you want to be like, if you got to say, okay, this person is the fastest man, for example, in the world, it can't be just because he ran one race really fast. It has to be every day, all the time. Because at any given moment, that dude could be carrying like a bag full of sandwiches and some kid goes darting past him and boom, he's not the fastest man in the world anymore. And so it's like some dude gets his dick chopped off. He goes and runs with a bunch of women and he wins by, you know, she wins by, you know, 3 seconds or whatever. Now, like, oh, that's the fastest woman in the world. Well, why do we care who the fastest woman in the world is compared to men anyway? Why split it out? I mean, I'm not making my point because I've been drinking a lot, but I think the idea
I was
competitive.
Just curious what your thoughts were. I didn't catch an answer to my question in there, but
well, because I, it's like asking me, you know, like
if you were a woman, biological woman, and you trained your entire life to try and be in the like upper echelon in terms of performance when it comes to cycling, say, and then a transgender woman joins the race and blasts your fucking record out of the park. How do you imagine you might feel about that? And I don't want to hear like, well, I have no idea how a woman would feel because, I don't know, like really. And of course, I'm exposing my own opinion here. I feel like that's a weird situation that transgender people are dominating sports.
Well, I guess it's a matter of, you know, they've done bullshit where they'll like say, hey, this person's winning too much. Let's go make sure they have the right genitals, you know, and I think that's invasive and stupid. And how would I feel? I guess if I was a woman and a transgendered woman was breaking all my records, I guess the only thing I could do is go to the committees and say, I need you to test this person for doping. I need you to test this person for drugs because you and I both know, Joe, that you don't go from man to have boobies without some drugs in your body. And that's the rule they could use to say, no, you don't get to have these records because you took drugs. I mean, if all they did was chop off their willy, they're not going to look any different. They have to do a lot of hormone treatments. And apparently those things are banned in sports. So there's your solution. I don't know. It's lame, but whatever. I just – the sports
well,
are –
Well, when you go through puberty with testosterone, that to me, that seems like an unfair advantage if you're going to then become a woman. Your bone structure, your bone density, you're coming into the competition with an unfair advantage.
But we can make – I can make an argument along the lines of take the top – 5 million fastest women in the world, and they could all beat me in a race. They have an unfair advantage over me. Whatever it is that they were born with, I wasn't born with. Now, someone could come up to me and say, tell you what, if you had the right training, we could get you up to be faster than all but 1 million of the fastest women in the world. Okay, great. So you trained me up. I'm still slower than 1 million other people who have a genetic predisposition to being fast. And so you're going to say, well, men naturally have a genetic predisposition. I'll say, no, not all of them. Don't lump me in with those other cocksuckers, okay? Because I'm not running marathons in 3 hours or four for that matter.
Yeah, but if you devoted your life to training from a very young age to try and achieve something.
Yeah.
It seems that there should be some sort of standard.
Well, here's I was
because you compared to the fastest women in the world is that's not what I'm talking about. Like you haven't devoted your life to competing in that sport.
When I was in junior high, this is an embarrassing story. I think I've told it before. I was on the track team, and since no one else would do it, I was doing the high jump. Now, it was laughable, just the very idea of me doing a high jump or whatever. One day at practice, I was trying to get over 5'9" or something, right? Which is way too high for me, but I was trying. And I kept failing over and over again, but I was trying. And then the basketball team got out of practice, and they walked across the track field. One of them stopped next to the bar that I was trying to jump over, and flat-footed with no run-up, just jumped over it. Jumped over it so high, he didn't even have to land on his back, okay? Right? I quit the track team that day. It was just like, now this is not a guy who trained all his life to do anything, and he didn't go through any kind of like rigorous hormonal change. He was just naturally able to, at the same age as me, jump 6 fucking feet in the air.
Yes, so some people have genetic predisposition toward athleticism of this type or another, and because of that, transgender people suddenly dominating I don't know.
It's just, it's arbitrary. We could say that, like, okay, we have
this to. This is it. What I'm talking about is not arbitrary.
It is arbitrary. It's not arbitrary. It's absolutely arbitrary. Whether you choose running a race, or rowing a boat, or hitting a ball, or knitting very fast, or reading very fast, or riding a bike on a wall. I mean, you can come up with anything, right? Running is really simplistic, and so we use that as a differentiator between who's fast and who's not. But we could have picked a billion other things where a genetic predisposition is going to get somebody the win. We could say that, okay, from now on, instead of running, all we're going to do is take all the contestants and draw from them a pint of blood. And we're going to see who's got the most testosterone. And whoever that person is wins, right? It's essentially the same thing, except we get the excitement of watching them, you know, sweat and all this other crap. But it's arbitrary, right?
Okay, I get your point. You think that it's fair. That's your answer to my question.
I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair that a man can turn himself into a woman and beat and compete with women and win all the records. But I also don't think it's fair that people who have a genetic predisposition to being better at something get to compete with people like me who just can't win. It shouldn't be. It's not a competition.
Fair
right?
enough.
It's not a competition, and it's arbitrary. If you were to, like, Yale Halisi, I probably said his name wrong, whatever, one of the people who's had the world record for the fastest man in the world at some point, if he and I were to sit down and do, I don't know, 1,000 different things competitively, I have no idea who would win the most of those competitions, right? He'd win all of the things where you have to move fast, but who's to say that he would be a better, I don't know, he would give hugs to kids with Down syndrome better than me. I don't know. And if you, right. you know, if I win that one, aren't I a better person?
Well, I don't know if we're really calculating someone's entire worth as a human being. But if I'm following your reasoning, then it just doesn't matter.
An we
achievement
are.
In a sport. And becoming the greatest, which is some combination between your genetic predisposition for athleticism and your hard work throughout your life, mm-hmm. perhaps people admire that because of the hard work and because maybe you're just this unbelievable phenomenon, natural talent, mm-hmm. natural creature that yeah. can do this. But what you're saying is it none of that should matter. And why do we even care? Why do we even admire these people that have reached the top of their athletic
yeah.
competition?
I mean, I admire somebody who's passionate about something, but I don't know that I'm even convinced that, you know, there's a lot of value in so-called hard work, right? It's like a part of the Americana, you know, the myth of the American person who works their ass off night and day, you know, takes no time off and then achieves greatness. And I'm like, that sounds stupid. And it's like, well, you know, Tiger Woods would go out there and he would practice chip shots for 8 days straight. He wouldn't even sleep. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't even shit. Well, because he wasn't eating. He didn't have to shit. So that's a convenient thing. Right? Okay, so good. He's good at that. I don't fucking care. You know what I mean? It's just like, hooray, you did that. What was the guy who climbed Everest? And they said, why'd you climb? He said, because it was there. Cool for you, but it has nothing to do with the rest of humanity. And furthermore, the idea that a person grows up thinking, I don't identify with men, I identify with women. Well, what he's really identifying with is the roles that society has foisted onto women, or he is not identifying with the roles that society has foisted onto men. And I don't know that a person should be called a man or a woman just because they ran really fucking fast. You know what I mean? What's her name? The fast woman who just retired, Woodley. I can't remember her name. Anyway, I remember it later. She's British. She's awesome. I don't think anybody watches her, you know, win races and go, wow, that's some good breeding material right there, right? And the reason they don't is twofold. One, running a race doesn't make you a good breeder. And two, a person is more than just their genetic or their genitals' ability to reproduce. You know what I'm saying? So when Shalane Woodsley,
and so
or whatever
we
her
should
name is,
no, we should no longer admire athleticism.
I don't. I mean, one thing I've noticed is that people who are the best at what they do are often very gracious people. Okay, mm-hmm. And that is super, super admirable. Like,
but not their athleticism. If we're talking about athletes,
well, that's what I'm getting at. Is like, here's somebody who's the best. I don't know. Let's pick something else. He's the best knife sharpener in the world. That's stupid. He's the best.
No, that's me. You, okay. You didn't know that?
And then, and if you come up to him and you say, hey, I've always wanted to be a knife sharpener, chances are the best one will be like, I'm glad you're into it. I'm into it too. Let me show you some things. Whereas number four and number five, because they're so focused on getting to number one, they're like, fuck off, kid. I ain't sharpening knives with no midgets. You're a midget in this scenario because you're short, not because you're actually a little people, a little person.
Yeah.
Dwarf. So it's like, I can admire somebody for having a lot of compassion or a lot of passion that turns into compassion and brings them in together with other people. And if a guy turns himself to a woman and runs a race and wins, and then someone comes up to him and says, you are an inspiration to me. And he says, or she says, let me tell you about my training regime and I want to share with you that. I'm like, okay, I admire that. I don't give a fuck if he still has a Y chromosome, whatever. He's training, he's sharing. But if he wins all these records and says, that's right, I did it. Fuck all you people. I'm the best. It's like, screw you. You're nothing. I don't care. Anyway.
Well, I'll grant you this too. You know, I don't care how good you are at anything. If you're an asshole, it completely devalues everything else. Right.
And I don't care how bad you are at everything.
Assholes just take your human worth all the way down.
Yeah. And as I was saying, I was trying to interrupt you, but you didn't let me because you're smarter than that. If you're terrible at stuff, but you're really nice about it, I'm cool with that. I'm fine. Like, I've been to restaurants where the server was awful, but the server was also trying, I guess is what I should just say. They were trying, and they were nice about it and apologetic. It's like, you're getting a big-ass tip. I've also been to restaurants where the service was immaculate, but it was also indifferent and cold. And I was like, you know what? I'm only leaving the bare bottom 23% because screw you. Well, we don't play that. There's a big difference between 23 and 25.
To wrap up the Joe Rogan portion of this show.
And the first half of our fucking podcast today. Jesus Christ.
Wow, the first half?
Almost, yeah. We're at 22, but yeah.
Anyway, I feel bad for female UFC fighters where suddenly a dude that's been a male for 30 years is suddenly a female, comes in and kicks the shit out of everybody. Yeah, doesn't seem right to me.
I don't know. I don't think that the solution is we're going to ban people, because then it's always like, well, as soon as you draw a line, people find a way to get up right up to the edge, right? I don't know if you've known anything about the Tour de France and all the drug rules they've had over the years, but every time they drew a line, it was like, okay, now we know how far we can go. And if you didn't go all the way to that line, you're going to lose, right? And so they redraw the line and everyone go right up the edge again. So it's like, where do you draw the line? I don't know. If I try to think of something.
Well, let's just not have men and women's sports anymore.
Yeah, but what's
let's not draw any distinctions at all between any human beings.
Okay, if you want to take what I said down that rabbit hole, then let's go. Let's get dirty. Let's get in the dirt. Let's get in the mud. You can draw distinctions between people, but you can also do it by virtue of the things they've chosen to do, say, and or be, as opposed to what they were forced to have upon their existence. You know what I'm saying? Like, I am genetically predisposed to fart when I eat beans, okay? Now, whether I choose to eat beans or not, that's what makes me different from those people who are addicted to beans because they were born that way, because their mom was a beanhead and they were born with it and then they couldn't help themselves, right? Don't compare me to that guy. Instead, compare us on how good we fold paper airplanes, because our bean to fart ratio is not, it's not going to have any impact on the GDP is what I'm saying. But our paper airplane skills, Joe. Listen, when I was in the Army, okay, this was like 1950, wait, no, I was born in 71. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay. What else is going on? I'll tell you about my latest obsession, and then you can comment. And hopefully it'll go off on a wild tangent, and I actually won't finish the story. But lately I've been playing this video game called Hearthstone Battlegrounds. Ooh. Now, do you know what a Do you know what auto chess is, Joe?
No, chess. But my imagination's running wild.
Okay, so first there was Warcraft 2. Not Warcraft 3, not Warcraft 1, not World of Warcraft, but Warcraft 2. And somebody made a mod for it, and they called that mod Defense of the Ancients. And then that was good, but they decided to do an even better job, and so they did Dota 2. And it's its own thing now. It's nothing to do with World of Warcraft anymore. It's its own thing. And then somebody made a mod of that called Auto Chess. And then the people who made Warcraft that started this whole mess, they decided to do their own version of Auto Chess called Hearthstone Battlegrounds. And so it's come full circle. Mod of a mod, and it's an adaptation of a mod of a mod. And basically what it is, you're a dude, your character, and you recruit dudes, and then you don't control them after that. Once you recruit them, they just go fight and shit. And then they either win or lose, and then you recruit some more, but because you won or lost, you got more gold, and you can spend more gold to get better dudes, and you fight again. You keep going until there's only one person left, and that person is the biggest loser because they just spent 20 minutes trying to make a bunch of cartoons win a fight when they could have been, you know, running well, races.
Have you been playing this game a lot?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Well, anything that you do a lot, well, you don't even necessarily have to do certain things a lot. You're naturally talented at a lot of things.
That's true.
Were you good at it right away, or
I gotta say,
you got better as you played a shitload of games? But like, did you find that you had a natural? were you adept immediately at the game?
The very first time I played, I did pretty good. Like the very first game, I did okay, and then it was a downhill slide. But now I'm starting to come back up. Now that I've lost a lot, I've learned some things. I don't know that I can say I have a natural ability. I think that, you know, barring being extremely arrogant, I'm safe saying that I'm a reasonably intelligent person. I'm reasonably creative, and I'm reasonably unabashed about exploring my own strengths and abilities. And so
very good.
In this game, I have done that. So if I have any kind of, you know, if I have any natural ability, it's in my perseverance to keep trying. So yeah, I've been getting better. There are people out there who are just naturally good at this stuff, and they'll probably win more often than I would. But I'm having a blast, I tell you. So what I do now is, Joe, just to bore the ever-loving shit out of you, what I do is every time I play a game, I have to write 100 words. And I have to write 1,000 words a day. And the reason I do that has nothing to do with the game. I'm not necessarily writing about the game, but the idea is that like I do think that I'm a writer, and so I should be writing. So as much as I'm enjoying this game, I'm going to use it as a push to write.
That's a very on-brand Jason thing to do.
It is. It's yeah.
And that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah, you incorporate writing challenges.
So to speak, yeah, yeah. And it's like mostly it's like, okay, after I do this, I'm going to play again, and then I'm going to go wash my butt, and then I might eat an orange. You know, like it's boring shit. But sometimes I can't think of anything to say that's even boring, and so I just make stuff up. Like, my wife has blah, 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 arranged the dishes in the kitchen, and she's summoning a demon, and oh, no, he's in the cookies, and oh, I ate the cookie, now I'm the demon. Whatever, it just comes to mind and just, you know. The hope is that one of these little things, I'll just get so into whatever I'm writing about, it'll just take off. And like 6 hours later, it's like, wow, I wrote a novel. Cool. Time to go eat that orange.
I've been reading one of your novels. I don't want to go into it. Once I'm done with it, mm-hmm. I'm going to start the next one. But before I start the next one, I want to talk about it on the podcast.
I'm
enjoying it.
Out of arrogance, I'll ask you just this question. Is it the silly one or the serious one?
It seems to be a little bit of both.
Then it's definitely the serious one because it ain't the silly one. No one's reading the silly
it's
one going.
By Satan.
Yeah, that's the serious one. Oh, but it's not the one I was thinking of. Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll go into it because
yeah, you're right. Later. One is serious.
We'll talk about it.
Because there's three. One's serious, one's silly, and one's both. Okay, cool. Anyway. What have you been up to? I've been just talking a blue streak here, Joe. What have you been up to? Have you molested any fire hydrants lately? I don't know. Just
no. I mean, I'm sure you can tell. I've been listening to maybe too much Joe Rogan.
Okay, that's fine. Like Joe Rogan is gifted.
Is probably overly influenced by that guy at this point.
Okay. You know what I like about
Joe? I try to have my own thoughts, but when someone's just talking into your fucking ear all the time, I feel like you become infected by their opinions.
Sure.
And maybe that's happening to me, but
could be.
Yeah, I've been listening to Joe Rogan. I've been working out. I've been eating right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you hit 192. That's no small potatoes. Well, it's smaller
potatoes.
It's funny
because if I ever get to – I probably have said this to you before, but if I ever get to 190, I've got down to 191. If I ever get down to 190, that's when I get to go to my barber and have a deal with her and my wife. If I hit 190, she's going to take a straight razor, old school style, hot towels, and shave my entire fucking head, beard, everything.
Wow.
Down to the skin. And so then I will feel like a brand new baby boy.
Yeah. Is that a thing that you think you will find pleasurable?
I just like the idea for some reason. My wife has maybe warmed up to it a little bit.
Okay.
I think just because I'm getting skinnier and whether she'll admit it or not, she likes that.
Well, let's talk about that.
Whatever is motivating me to become skinnier, I don't know if the completely bald head and face is what's truly motivating me, but I think it's a fun thing to – I think it's a fun kind of reward for when I finally hit the goal.
That's
35 pounds was the goal.
Wow, you were a porker.
There's a reason why I was writing songs about Dom DeLuise and you know, I couldn't tie my shoes.
Well, I've seen over,
my eyeballs pop out and I puke in my mouth.
I've seen that photos.
Was all real, and I really looked like Dom DeLuise.
Well, I don't know.
A young Dom DeLuise.
A young Dom. Okay, cool. Gotcha. Yeah.
Vibrant Dom DeLuise.
Just to either inspire you or frustrate you. This could be your high jump story. I don't know. Probably not. Hopefully it's not. But for years, I was trying to lose weight too, right? And according to the charts, I'm supposed to weigh 162 pounds, which is ridiculous. It's just stupid. That is ridiculous. And you're about the same height as I am, right? More like, I think you're a little bit taller. Are you
a little bit taller, maybe?
You like 5'10", 5'11", somewhere in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 5'10 and a half.
All right. There you go. So I think the BMI charts say that you're supposed to be in the, you know, like 168 or something. I don't know. But just think about that. It seems patently ridiculous, right? And I was even in Weight Watchers, and Weight Watchers is a deal where if you hit your BMI,
this seems too skinny, is what you're saying, right?
It seems dangerous. And Weight Watchers is like, look, this is how much you're supposed to weigh, and when you make it here, then you're free to be a member. It's free. You don't have to pay anymore if you make your weight or whatever. And I was like, well, can I go get a doctor's note telling you that this is just stupid because the BMI chart's ridiculous? And they're like, yeah, if you want to, go through that effort. And I said, fuck it, I just quit Weight Watchers and start drinking Cokes again. But
I struggled. I think if I got down to the weight I'm supposed to be at, I would look like an AIDS patient.
Well, let me tell you, this is my story.
Oh, shit.
For all of this effort, I think the lowest I got was like 179, right? And, you know, that was just working my ass off. And it just, and that seemed, I was happy with that. I was like, okay, I'm just a 180 kind of dude. That's how I am. And then I took...
I would have thought that you got lower than that. Like, well, I've seen you real skinny where I'm like, ooh, man, look at that running dude.
Well,
skinny and shit.
So I started taking bupropion, right? That's this, what they call the sexy, skinny, happy drug, right? It's for depression. And in addition,
does it also cause psychosis?
It could if you're not supposed to take it, I guess. But what it did for me was I was taking that. I was eating way less because I was motivated, and I was doing 6 miles a day through running and walking. I got down to 162. I did it. I did it. And, you know, there it was.
Did you look like fucking Jack Skellington?
No. I looked like a normal dude. I just looked like a dude. I mean, I haven't got a lot of big muscles, but, you know, I didn't have abs that you could see or anything like that. I just looked like a regular dude. That was 2 years ago, Joe. I'm nowhere close to that now. So it didn't last. But if I can get down to 162, you can get down to 190. All you got to do is like take some X-Lax and you're there.
You know, I got down to 191, and you know what I did?
What's that?
I went to Taco Bell.
Fuck yeah, you did.
Because I was like, 191, I'm almost there. And then I felt compelled to just eat Nachos Bel Grande.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've done so good.
Yeah.
How about a little reward? How about some Taco Bell? Mm. And guess what? I didn't go down to 190. I did not reach 190 the next day or the day after.
Okay.
And you know what? If you get down to 191, all you got to do is fast for a couple days. That's yeah. I could have pushed it and just got there.
Yeah. You will. But, that's okay. It shouldn't be.
I keep celebrating when I get real close. and then what do you know?
Well, you're celebrating.
I go back up a couple pounds.
I did finally get a hold of that book, Atomic Habits, mm-hmm. you know, and I've been browsing it. Not really reading it because, like a lot of these books, the guy puts like 8 paragraphs into what could have been a sentence, which is, don't do that, you know. Which I don't.
Yeah, I listened to that book.
Okay,
and that was a little bit more palatable. I didn't find that it was well written.
Yeah,
I do like the idea of you do not rise to your goals; you fall to your systems.
Yeah, yeah, that's all.
Well, I like that idea a lot.
So your system right now says that when you hit what you think is a milestone, you get to celebrate. That's part of your system, right?
Well, it's part of my kind of motivational system, yeah. but the way that I interpreted that is that if I can habituate, like my routine has become my system, and I fall upon my habits, so yes. I've become my the way that I eat is pretty routine. I don't mm-hmm. even think about it anymore. It's become right. kind of procedural instead of intentional.
Yes, you know? I'm the same way with sexual intercourse.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just very procedural.
Begin. You don't have to think about.
You begin with a kiss. Work your way down to the soul kiss. Work your way up to the plunge. One more kiss. Go to sleep. Every single time, doesn't matter if it's my wife, if it's the neighbor's dog, if it's a tree stump. Always the same. Always.
Well, speaking of fitness, I want to pitch something to you. It's because here's something I've noticed with okay. my coworkers, my loved ones. There's a lot of complaints. There's yeah. a lot of negativity, yeah. right? And if you're trying to get in shape, you can get a Fitbit, right?
Get that Fitbit,
and it tracks everything, steps and
by Google, well, Alphabet.
Heart rate, all that stuff. Fitbit, and I was thinking, what people, if you could track how many times you complain every day and try to bring that number down,
mm-hmm.
just stop complaining.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone's well-being, just that your perspective on life just starts to naturally improve if you can just stop bitching.
Are you saying the people are complaining about your weight loss, or you're just drawing a straight up parallel?
No, I'm talking about this is something that I see in myself and all the people around me that mm-hmm. that it's a part of just the way people communicate and mm-hmm. relate to one another is by complaining about things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I find it toxic.
You're a Taco Bell manager. You kind of have to – I mean, you sort of have to – that's part of your job, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Look, it's a big part of everyone's life, but I'm just saying if you what I want to do is create a complaint tracker and
okay.
I don't know, put it on your wrist like a Fitbit.
Yeah.
And it tracks your complaints and then you can try to bitch less. Anyway, right. you would call it a Fitbitch.
I like that. Okay. I don't like the name, but I like that you made that name.
Okay,
I can like the effort and not like the result, right? Because you know I don't like that word, but I still think it's funny what you did. Am I allowed to do that?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm just pitching. You yeah. know, I don't.
What do you call it? Fit pitch. Pitch a fit.
That's not funny.
How about call it pitch a fit? How about don't pitch a fit? Pitch fit. Pitchless fit. Pitch fitless.
Let me pitch you something else.
Okay.
Because I did a montage for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
Last time for the Halloween episode, I was really happy with it. And I was trying to think of new types of montages, like new themes for montages. So sure. I can – because I missed doing montages. I want to do more.
You're very good at it.
And I was thinking, okay, what's a new idea for a montage? And I realized this is pretty easy, but I could just go back and try to pick out all of the things that are kind of politically incorrect that we say.
Yeah.
there's not a whole lot of that.
Right.
But if you take a lot of the things that we say out of context,
of course,
is really how you make a montage anyway. A lot of that stuff is funny because it's out of context.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is go back, and I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do this politically incorrect montage and just make us sound like terrible, terrible people. And I want to call the montage out of contextual assault.
Out of contextual. I like that.
Okay.
It's consensual.
I'm just pitching ideas.
You're an idea pitcher. Let me pitch you a question. You're really good at making montages, and you missed it. And I think there's probably like something in there. Like people fear a yearning to do the thing that they're good at. At least the things they think they're good at, right? I have a friend. She's a very dear friend of mine, and she has an ex-boyfriend who writes the most god-awful poetry. Oh, fuck, it's bad. I think poetry in and of itself is 99% bad. Like, most of it. There's like 3 poems that are good. The rest is just shit. That's just my opinion, though. Whatever. I do have a degree, though. So, anyway. But these guys' poems are demonstrably bad. Like, they're, you know how sometimes things are so bad they're good? His poems are so bad.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping.
No,
because
there's
really shitty poetry just suddenly blossoms into pure entertainment.
Well,
if you hit this threshold of being so bad that it just becomes a fucking comedy genius.
I think that, and I'm going to make a real subtle distinction here, but I think things that are accidentally good by being bad, like somebody's just bad and then somebody says, oh, I think that's brilliant, those are not as good as things that are written to be so bad they're good, because then you can control it a little bit and get some nuance in there. But let me tell you what this guy is. His poetry is so bad, it's so bad that it's bad, and that's why it's good. I mean, it's like, you don't read this and go, oh, this is actually brilliant. You read this and go, oh my God, this is awful. And then you think about it more, and you go, wow, that was really, really bad. And then you realize, I've been thinking about this. That must have been powerful shit. I've been thinking about how bad this was for like 3 hours. So it's so bad that it's so bad it's good. And I forgot why I brought this up.
Just because of how entranced and fixated upon it you become.
Yeah, I was just like...
Not that it makes you laugh.
No.
It's just that it's like, God damn, that's terrible.
It just really shows you how farcical it is to come up with like rules and guidelines and you know... To say that good poetry is this, this, or this, it's like, no, it's not. It's completely ineffable. You can never say what it is. Because this guy's poems, they did everything and nothing. It's just that these words were put together. If you take a billion monkeys, you take an infinite number of monkeys, and you have them start pounding on a typewriter, and eventually they'll come up with a Shakespeare, but they'll never come up with this guy's poetry. Never, ever. It's impossible. And what I want to know is, do you think he misses it when he doesn't do it? I think the answer is yes. So my question to you is, Joe, is there anything that you're really good at that you don't like to do? You're really good at it, but God damn it, you hate doing it.
Oh, man.
I'm putting you on the spot there.
Question.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking the other day that I'm not sure if I'm really good at anything.
Well, come on now.
I think I'm like the jack of all mediocrity.
Okay, I've thought that about myself too. So let's stop with the imposter syndrome. Let's put on our arrogant hat. You're really good at lots of things. Go ahead. What's something you're really good at you don't like to do? Here, I'll give you a little.
I thought I was getting pretty good at being in a rock band and like writing maybe overly emotional songs and singing and playing guitar in a band.
Yeah.
And I do not have a taste for that anymore. I'm glad that I don't do it any longer.
Okay. So like
I've reveled in the achievement of getting out of that process.
So if like the Edge called you and said, "We finally got rid of that lead singing fucker. He was just fucking the whole band up. We're hoping you'll help us out. Now, Joe, we know you hate it, but you're still good at it. Can you help us out until we find another lead singer?" You could do that, right?
I would not join you two because I would fuck that band up again. Now I'm back to the reality of the situation is I really don't think I was that good at being in a rock
band. No, come on. Give yourself.
I was trying to put my arrogant hat on and say, you know, I had convinced myself and a few, there was a small group of people that agreed with me that I was good at it. They would come to my shows. But if suddenly the edge was like, we kicked Bono out of the band, we'd like for you to join you too. I wouldn't do that because that would be setting myself up for unbelievably widespread. I would just be humiliated.
What if they changed the name? It's no longer called U2. Now it's called
#U2.
It's called Kleptophobia or something. I don't know. Just a new band name. So now you don't have to do the U2 thing. So, Joe, you and I are sitting in a room, and there's the Edge and whatever the drummer's name is, like Steve or something. And they're like, all right, we're being open to you two. We're being open. We're going to listen to your ideas. So give us your ideas. Now, if you and I started giving them rock and roll ideas, whose ideas they're being open, do you think they would find the most useful, yours or mine?
I do think that I might be able to out musician you and out songwriter you.
Okay, so there you go. So I
feel confident with. Turn that around. I think you could outwrite me.
Yes, I was going to say that there isn't an author alive that I don't think I could write with. Now, I don't want to write with a lot of them because I think they're terrible. Not terrible in the sense they don't write well, but terrible in the sense that I just don't like it, right? Because I'm very picky. But I feel that I could go toe-to-toe with any of these fuckers. The only thing they got over me is fame and you know, and money and talent and shit. But when it comes to it just comes to self-confidence, I got that.
I think you're a really good writer. But when it comes to me, though, here's another reason why I'm glad I don't do the rock band thing anymore. Mm-hmm. Because I really felt like I ran out of gas. Like I didn't. There was some emotional. There was a perspective that I had that gave me the drive to do mm-hmm. that and to write songs. And I don't have any of that in me anymore.
Okay.
So like yeah. I'm not even sure if I could do that well anymore. Because I'm a different person. There's the motivation and the drive to do that and to write a good emotional song is something I'm not sure I'm even capable of anymore.
Yeah, but if Celine Dion called you up and said, I need you to do this, you could do it, right? Now, who cares? She's going to put her Celine, you know, schmear on it when it's all done. So don't worry about that. I'm just saying you could sit down right now, Joe. You could right now sit down and write a song and all the parts. You could do that, right?
Yeah, and let me say this too. Doing the podcast reminded me of this phenomenon where if you just commission yourself to do creative things, you can surprise yourself with what you come up with.
Yeah, you can write 100 words every time you play a shitty video game.
And you end up, you know. So if I had to write, if it was just like, look, this is your fucking job now, okay? I need 3 songs a week. Just fucking do it. I don't care if you like it or not. Just do it. Eventually, I think I would kind of get into a zone and the skill set would grow and I would cultivate some emotional energy and start to get better at it and get into it. Maybe.
See, I think that, though, you got to be careful because I believe that's true. But I think the same could be said for, you know, like beating nuns. Like if someone said your job now is just every time a nun walks by, you just got to thwack her with this cricket board on the butt. Don't leave a mark. Like at first you're like, I'm not hitting nuns with this cricket board and like do it or we're gonna pull your penis out through your nostril. You're like, God damn it, I guess I have to. And then I think after a while I'd be like, you know, I'm gonna get good at this. I'm gonna get some wind up going. I'm gonna
put some stank on it.
Put some stank on it. Right. You would do it. But I just wanted to get at that in order to qualify as you're good at it. But you don't like it. You have to actually be good at it. And you were trying to give me this bullshit about you're not good at it, that you would not join U2. Fuck you, Joe. You're joining U2. You're doing it. Bono out, Joe in. And they're going to be all like, hey, you look like the cover of one of our albums. And you're like, shut up. I know that story already. See, well, I'm really good at it.
Maybe if I could do the Journey thing where that guy joined Journey, I think he ended up helping them write new songs. But mostly he just sang the old songs.
Yeah.
I would rather do that than have to write new songs. I don't think I could outwrite Bono. I don't think I could out-sing him either. But if I was just singing Bono songs,
Sunday, you know, from all their
previous albums, I might be able to do a halfway decent job.
Don't sell yourself short. Here's what I'm good at that I hate to do. I'm really good at eating an incredible fucking amount of food. Seriously, you should see me. I can put it away, but I hate it. After about the fourth cheeseburger, I'm like, oh God, I don't want to do this anymore. But there's like 15 half cheeseburgers left. I have to finish them. I can't just leave them there. I'm really good at it. I can just put food in and in, and I hate it. I hate it, Joe. I hate it, but I'm good. And if you ever need it, like if you two and Celine Dion are doing a comeback tour and you're writing for both of them, you're like, dude, they keep filling my writer's room with all these bologna cheese sandwiches. I don't want to insult these people because they're Irish and they're Canadian. And I don't know what their fucking mores are. Can you come help? I'd be, boom, I'm there. I'm eating these cheese sandwiches. I'm eating the bologna. I'm like spreading the mustard on my face. And you're like, mustard? I'm like, yeah, because only in America we put mayonnaise on bologna. Everyone else, they do mustard. And you're like, I didn't know that. As well, if you know, read more books. But no, it's just write your song. And you could write a song about that. You're like, I got a cousin who eats my bologna sandwiches. Wow, wow, wow.
That was a pretty good song.
Yeah.
Good job.
I just wrote that. So we got 10 minutes left. What else is going on?
I was thinking about telling you some of the kind of funny things that I've noticed about my wife since she became pregnant.
Whoa, you are a brave motherfucker. No pun intended. Let's hear it.
I asked her if I could talk about this stuff, and she said it was okay. I still feel hesitant about it, though.
I don't know if you heard that in the background, but I said, you're a brave motherfucker, and my phone, Siri, popped up and said, I'm here. And now she's listening to me.
I don't have an answer for that.
Can help with? Nope. Thanks, Siri. If I get sued by Apple now. Sorry about that.
Are you guys done
yeah.
with your conversation there? I'm just saying, I've got this item here that I've been adding to as I notice, as I am amused by my pregnant wife. Mm-hmm. It's called Pregnant Ladies Are Weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe I'll just do kind of I'll just tell you one item.
Okay.
This item's called Milky Bananas.
Whoa.
And maybe this isn't as funny as it was. Maybe you had to be there. But Milky Bananas, suddenly my wife is just sitting there, and she's like, mmm. She's just making these noises, like yummy noises, like, mmm. And I'm like, what? What's going on with you over there? And she's just like, I just want to put, like, bananas and milk in a blender and just drink the Milky Bananas. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's a pregnant lady thing. And then there's a long pause, and you know, the moment had passed, and then suddenly she just goes, like under her breath, she's like, fucking Milky Bananas sounds so good right now. And I was like, okay. This just seemed weird, and that was my first item here.
Okay.
That really is funny. I'm so close to this that I found
it. No, I think that's funny.
I thought I'd share it.
You know, one could say that, and I don't mean to like, no, I'm going to go ahead. Yeah. No, I'm not going to say. I could say, well, one could say that. One could say that. No, I don't want to say this because it's okay, from a strictly biological standpoint, never mind fucking society. All right. I'm going out on a limb here, Joe. I'm probably going to get my ass handed to me, but I'm going to try.
All right.
Strictly, like, forget society and civilization. Just from the standpoint of pure biology, one could say that a pregnant woman is the purpose of evolution, of existence, right? A pregnant woman. Not a man, not a baby, but a woman who is in the process of reproducing. Because then, I mean, that's it. Job's done. Whatever she has, she is essentially passed on to the offspring, and that offspring would have the ability, all things being good and healthy, to contribute to the next reproducing human being, right? I mean, that's it.
She is the embodiment of the key element of evolution.
Yes. Now, I had to say rejecting any social, civilizational point of view because I'm just disgusted by the idea that women are still defined by their reproductive ability. That is not how women should be defined in our society, which is why I hesitated and hemmed and hawed. because that's not what I'm trying to get at. Nor am I trying to necessarily put a lot of a value in being the pinnacle of evolutionarily thing deal. Like it's not. I'm not saying that makes them better than you know the rest of the football players in the world. I'm just saying that if you were ever going to like say a pregnant woman is something, you. Like, if you say they're weird, well, really, the rest of us are weird because they are the ultimate. So you're weird for not liking milk and bananas, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Oh, I did. Now I'm following you.
Yeah.
But the title, Pregnant Ladies Are Weird.
Yeah.
I was just trying to be silly.
Oh, no.
I'm not trying to place a whole lot of judgment on pregnant ladies. No. My pregnant wife is my favorite person, period.
Right.
She was before she was pregnant, but, like, there is something so fucking adorable and wonderful about my pregnant wife.
I can tell you that I very much, like, I'm one of these people who, and I'm sure you're the same, who finds beauty in all different kinds of things, like perfectly formed breasts or a nice set of buttocks or lips that are painted with just a little bit of lipstick, but also really, really funny people. And there's something about pregnant women, that glow they get, they are just, and I'm not talking about like beautiful, like I want to go to bed with them because it's like, what's the point?
But no, they're captivating beyond there you go. Sexuality.
There you go. That's the perfect word. They're captivating. Yeah. And it's probably some genetic thing where it's like, you know, you want to protect them so they can go ahead and have the kid, whatever. I don't know. But it makes sense that your pregnant wife is your favorite person. That makes sense to me.
All right. Well, you're saying I'm a brave person. Well, like, I'm gonna talk about the next item here.
All right.
You were talking about perfect breasts, and my wife was talking about. She's like, well, what if breastfeeding makes like my boobs saggy? Like, what if? And then she looked kind of somber, and then she said, maybe the funniest thing I've ever heard. She's like, nobody loves an old swingy tit dog. It was a terrible thing to say. I laughed. I just couldn't stop laughing. And then I said, well, that's not even true. Like, I've seen lots of old swingy tit dogs and they still are loved.
Yeah.
And by the way, what makes you think that just breastfeeding a child is going to turn you into an old swingy tit dog? Like, old swingy tit dog. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, everything about it was,
yeah.
I've rendered you speechless.
No, I want you to. I just, again, it's the whole social thing where it's like, women just, they just have it. So they're like, okay, you're not a human being. You're not a real person if you can't get pregnant. Oh, but if that pregnancy wrecks you in some way, you will be of no further value to us, right? It's like, what's wrong with swingy tits, right? Just swing with them.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Strap on and go for it. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I said, there's beauty. This is going to sound crass, but whatever. I was watching a lot of Melissa McCarthy videos today when she was on Saturday Night Live. And there were scenes where she was doing stuff with Aidy Bryant, who's on Saturday Night Live, you know. And both of these women are not your typical cover models for skinny-ass runway weekly, right? They're not petite.
They're rotund.
Yeah. But whatever. I'm not exaggerating. These are some beautiful, beautiful women and
I agree.
And it's because they're so hilarious. Like I just want to hang out with them and like your wife, who knows, maybe baby latches on. Socks are dry. She's flapping in the breeze. Whatever. There's going to be some other aspect of her. You're going to look at her and go, God damn, she's hot. And she's going, but I got saggy tits. You're like, yeah, but the way you do that hula hoop with the flames and like your fingernails got sparklers on them, something about that is crazy. And she'll still be beautiful, right?
I will not be able to. My attraction to my wife is infinite. Like now, however she manifests herself in this physical world, I will always be attracted to her.
One could say that to sit there and be somber and under one's breath say, milky bananas. No one likes a sloppy tit dog. That's gorgeous.
Sloppy tit dog.
Whatever it was. That's a beautiful, just to watch that person go through that mental, you know, that kind of honesty and openness. The very fact that she can be that honest and open with somebody who's probably going to blab about it on his fucking podcast. That's just charming. It's beautiful.
Well, her honesty is the funniest thing about her personality and the most, like, adorable, endearing thing.
Yeah.
I must say. I'm a lucky guy.
You are. So am I. Because I do a podcast with one of the funniest individuals on the planet. And his name, JD's and Littleman. By the way, I don't know if you heard, but we don't say ladies and gentlemen anymore. We say JD's and Littleman. Anyway, his name is Joe Neil, not Rogan. Just playing with you. You should never doubt yourself. In fact, I want you, Joe, from now on, here's your homework. I want this next week, I want you to go out there, believe in yourself until you get destroyed. Right? Until you just get your legs chopped off by an axe-wielding schoolgirl. I just want you to live on the edge of your potential until you get fucked up. And then I want you to go, that wasn't so bad. And then go right back to it. That's your homework.
All right. I'm going to do this.
Okay. Starting now. Starting tomorrow. Not starting now. Starting tomorrow.
I want to tell you, I feel blessed to be doing a podcast with a human being that I find one of the funniest of all time.
Joe Rogan. I mean, me. I think I'm going to call today's...
Jason Lee.
That's right. Jennifer Jason Lee. I'm going to call today's episode, not Joe Rogan. Maybe. I don't know. It's been more than 7 days since I talked to you last. I hate that, Joe. I hate it. I hate it. We're both busy dudes. That's something I'm good at.
Yeah, and it's going to get busier.
Yeah, it is. Holiday season's coming up. There's a war on Thanksgiving, apparently. So I got to go join that battle. I haven't picked a side yet. And there's Christmas, the New Year's, and St. Patrick's Day, and Armistice Day. It just never fucking ends.
Well, maybe this episode wasn't super funny, but I'm interested to listen to it.
Yeah. The next one will be fun. Do we have a topic for next week?
I don't know. You got any ideas?
Well, I was thinking about putting together something with Rob. You know, the robot.
Oh.
About something. Something, I don't want to give it away, so never mind.
But is it, are you thinking about a theme? Would the theme be robots or artificial intelligence? Or?
No, it's going to be what he was going to talk about in his PSA. But I don't want to give it away.
But you would give away the surprise.
Yeah, I'll give it away. Well, let's see.
Let's do another random one, but let's bring some bells and whistles and have some fun.
Okay. Have we ever done that? Have we ever said, let's do a non-themed, full-on, self-indulgent episode? Because that's what it is, right?
Yeah, we've done random episodes with all sorts of, like, ads and montages.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't know if you have time. I certainly don't. Maybe not this time, but we should challenge ourselves. Like, it should be 1 week. You're like, okay, we're going to see how much content we can come up with. And that's just going to be the whole show. Just like five Larcos.
How many bits can we bring?
Yeah, six montages. And there's going to be a Leroy and Hackensack. What are those two guys that do the thing? They did the Joker thing and the Batman thing.
I don't even know who you're talking about.
LeVon and Randall? No. Fuck, I invented them.
Siegfried and Roy?
No. The guys who do the Joker. They did the Joker thing and the football thing. Oh, he doth... Kicketh the Batman.
Oh, you mean our characters, Otis and Lavando. They're real guys. Sorry, they're real
guys. Yeah, they're guys. Yeah. We'll do like three of those.
We need to do another one of those because that's funny.
All right. But next week.
Yeah, so we'll do some bits next week.
Do some bits.
Have some fun.
Okay.
We'll get back to comedy.
back to comedy.
We got serious.
Sort of. I tried to throw in some midgets. Listen, there's 30 seconds left of this song. I'm going to go silent so you can think of something to shout. And then, folks, we'll see you next week. Hasta la pasta.
Nobody loves an old swingy tit dog!